This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments. And right now, the Steam Winter Sale is on. Out of the Park Baseball 18 can be yours for just $9.99. And Franchise Hockey Manager 4 can be yours for just $19.99. These are the two best sports simulation games on the market, and they can be yours for way off of their regular prices. I mentioned Out of the Park Baseball 18 for PC and Mac, just $9.99. And Franchise Hockey Manager 4 on PC and Mac, just $19.99. And you can get them both for just $26.99. Out of the Park Baseball 18, as you know, has won multiple Game of the Year awards. Franchise Hockey Manager 4 is by far the best rated game in that franchise history. People are having a lot of fun. And if you want to know what Out of the Park Baseball and Franchise Hockey Manager are all about, you can join TJ Lowerman, Chris Jardine, and Adam Burnett and Jeff Riddles every Wednesday night for Out of the Park Night Around the World, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern with Chris, a.k.a. Snagglejay, doing his live stream on Twitch, along then at 9 with TJ and at 10 with Adam and Jeff. It's a great 3 hours every single Wednesday night on twitch.tv/OOTPDevelopments and then goes to our youtube.com/OOTPDevelopments channel a couple of days later. So join us, join them, and go get Out of the Park Baseball 18 for just $9.99 and Franchise Hockey Manager 4 for just $19.99 or both of them for just $26.99 now through January 4th during the Steam Winter Sale. Enjoy the show.
Well, we have come upon the end of 2017. It's been a great year for the Press Row Podcast and everybody involved with it, and a bit of a mixed bag as it relates to the sports gaming genre as a whole. After handing out our Sports Game of the Year, which was shared by MLB The Show 17 and Madden NFL 18, and the Racing Game of the Year, won by F1 2017, we now turn to discussing the biggest news and developments that not only impacted 2017, but may influence the games we all play in the years ahead. Welcome back to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Weedye, Pasta Padre. I'm joined by none other than Rich Grisham as we go through many of 2017's top stories. First, though, Rich, how you been? Do you have that new TV of yours up and running yet?
I am fantastic. I hope everybody is having a terrific holiday season. As we record this, it's a couple of days before New Year's, which is always fun. A little bit less pressure, right, than Christmas, which tends to be so busy. You get New Year's, and it's a little bit more about just, hey, what are we going to do tonight to sort of celebrate? So I love that. You know, the TV is not yet up. The TV is in the house. And what I'm going to be doing, as you know, is I'm going to be hanging up both televisions. I'm going to hang up my new one and the other one that I've already got in the room in my office upstairs in my house, which is currently sitting on a, just on a stand on my sort of media center. But to do that, I'm not the right person to do that, right? Because number one, I want it done correctly, you know, which means professionally. But also, I've got a lot of video game consoles, and I really need to figure out what I want to do because I really like to use them all at various points, right? So I've got I'm going to get an Xbox One X. I'm going to get a PlayStation 4 Pro, right? So I'm going to have the Xbox. Well, go ahead.
Why are you going to get a Pro, Rich? I don't really know. Think it's needed.
It's not needed.
Okay, yeah, clear. None of them are needed, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess because, well, both my Xbox One and my PlayStation 4 are launch day versions. And so I haven't, and I've got a Switch, obviously, too, as the current gen consoles. And I don't have a good reason other than I kind of want to have the best version of both. Not that I care about this stuff, because clearly I don't, because if I really did care about it, I would already have a 4K TV with HDR. I'd already have the Xbox One X or the Pro. But on the other hand, you know, I just kind of want to have the best version. So it's going to be a really good next couple of years for video games. This was a great year. 2017 was overall. And I think that trend is going to continue. And I think the sports video games in particular, but we know all the games are going to make more and more use of the horsepower that the newer, more powerful consoles give. So the bottom line is I don't have a good reason. I just kind of want to. And, you know, over the course of a few months, thanks to things like 0% financing deals, where, you know, if you pay it off, it's the same as paying cash, which I make liberal use of at various, you know, retail outlets. You know, you can sort of spread the cost of these things. Mm-hmm. So sort of because I'm sort of blessed with the purchasing power and I just kind of want to, that's what I'm going to do. But first of all, I have to get both of the TVs mounted and I need to get the wire situation addressed. I got to get, you know, I've got a 5 HDMI, you know, switcher, but that probably needs to be more than that because I got more stuff now than I have input.
Something you need also is the switcher you need is now one that's 4K capable, 4K and HDR capable. Otherwise, if you connect all your devices through that, you're not going to get the 4K HDR feed to your TV.
Well, that's good to know. I did not know that because there's going to be nothing going directly into the 4K HDTV because it's going to be way up high on the ceiling. And I'm going to have that. I'm sure that switcher running into that because I got the PS4, the Xbox One. I've got the SNES Classic. I've got the NES Classic. Switch. And then every once in a while, I'd like to turn on my PlayStation 3 or my Xbox 360, which I believe they both have HDMI. So, like, there's a lot of different, and that doesn't count my cable box, which is an HDMI, right? So there's just a lot of stuff vying for those HDMI inputs, you know?
Yeah.
I got to figure it out. I haven't gotten it figured out, but step one is getting the two televisions mounted with the proper wiring so that I can, you know, plug in various consoles into these things.
Yeah, I don't envy that whole mess of cords and stuff situation, because I have everything shoved behind my like entertainment center, and it scares me to think
it's bad
of like rearranging anything back there. But I know I don't have that many things hooked through. So,
oh, and I got my Wii U as well, which my son and I play regularly. There's a lot, and you know it's bad if you look at. I won't take a picture of it because it's a little embarrassing. It's not that embarrassing, but it's a little embarrassing. Just all of the wires and various plugs and stuff going on behind my entertainment center. It's crazy. And I need it to not be crazy. I need it to be better organized, and that's part of the whole process that's going to happen. So it's going to take a while. You know, step one is getting someone to actually do it. I've reached out to, you know, a person that I know that has done work in my house and does extraordinary work. And, you know, these guys are very difficult to sort of pin down to come and then to pin down to do the work. So I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to write the checks. I'm going to tell him what I want. He's going to tell me what the right thing is to do. So now it's just a matter of, can I get him here to do it? So that's where that is.
So what, so other than that, what have you actually been playing over here over the holidays?
So I have been playing Golf Story, mm-hmm. which thank you, Kat Bailey. Thank you, Chris Johnson from the Player One Podcast. Thank you, Kristen Spicer from DLC, who mentioned it on this past week's episode when they were talking about their games of the year. What a wonderful, wonderful game. I am delighted. It's on the Switch. I think it's a Switch exclusive. Mm-hmm. It is instantly familiar if you have played any sorts of Mario Golf games or golf games from the past, but also with a whole RPG maker style visual visual approach and storytelling and interacting your character with the world and the different people who ask you to do different things, and you take part in various competitions of varying kinds, mostly golf, but not all golf. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful game that I'm so glad I played. I would not have put it in my list of sports games of the year, but it's definitely making my list of games of the year, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
It is clearly a sports game because you're playing golf and there is a lot of golf, and I mean that in a good way. It's easy to pick up and play and understand, and over the course of time, you get more and more options. I'm able to be successful almost all the time, and when I'm not able to be successful, I know why, and I'm able to fix it and accomplish things. My son has also really enjoyed it, which is a lot of fun, right? When we're both playing something at the same time, and we're sort of able to talk about our experiences. It's just a wonderful game, and again, I'm so glad that Kat had it as her sports game of the year. So, you know, that was, I think, you know, I had heard a few other people talk about it, but really Kat doing that pushed me over the edge. And I think I've even mentioned it on the show. And so I got it that night or the next day, and I've been playing it ever since. And it's awesome. Love, love, love it. And I strongly recommend, if you have a Switch, go get Golf Story. If you don't like it, I won't pay for the refund. No, I will not, but I will be very surprised if you get that game and you don't like it. So, Brian Weeda, I'm challenging you to go get Golf Story or play Golf Story, sir.
Yep. That is the plan. Anything else you've been messing with here lately?
Well, I will say that I've been playing a lot of NBA 2K as well. That is what I'm playing on the treadmill, which means that's what I play a good amount of. And I'm playing my GM,
I love every minute.
Love it. Every time I play it, I like it more. I've got all the settings right where they want to be. So I'm the Wizards. I have the ups and the downs. I'm a good team. I'm leading the Eastern Conference, but I don't win every game. But the settings are right, you know, with the numbers. I boosted the numbers thanks to Dzar giving me the attributes to change. I didn't change them dramatically, but I changed them enough to where it feels fair. And so that's been a huge boost. And then there's that whole storyline, which doesn't really get in the way too much, but definitely adds what I think is a really fun, completely unnecessary, which makes it great element to it. And including, and I'll just say it, so like, you know, the spoilers here if you haven't played it, right? But it, and not super deep spoilers, because I'm basically day and date with where we are now. I'm in late December of this first year. And the first owner is sort of a loony guy and makes a whole bunch of strange demands, including that I go get Vince Carter. I just have to go get Vince Carter. And then he sells the team to a new guy who comes in and is like, hey, you know, you're going to keep the job and we're going to keep rolling and I'm going to stay out of the way. And a week later, promptly he's like, oh yeah, by the way, my son is going to be your assistant GM.
Yeah.
And he's also demanding that I go get, you know, one of the top one or two picks in the whole draft and
Which
do anything to do
it. That's like literally impossible almost to do in the NBA. Well, what's weird about it even is they're like, you haven't acquired the pick, and like, you don't know who's going to have a top three pick. That's what the lottery is all about. So how am I supposed to acquire a top three pick?
Well, Brian Weeda, let me tell you what I did. Mm-hmm. I traded this year's number one pick, next year's number one pick, and the year after that's number one pick of the Washington Wizards to the Cleveland Cavaliers for the Brooklyn Nets number one pick.
Uh-huh.
And they took the deal.
And your owner was satisfied with that?
Or I have no idea.
I had made a deal for what would have been a top pick, but then the owner just basically, or what potentially could have been a top pick, and the owner basically just ignored it. So I don't know what the qualifications are for achieving that, or even if it's possible.
Or if it even matters. Who knows if it really matters, right? I mean, I'm on a mission to win a championship this season. Like, I've got the game where now I feel good about my chances. And if you remember how I play the game, you know, I have it set to the full 12-minute quarters. And what I do is I simulate it until just after the start of the third quarter or the third period. Because it's not a quarter, because I'm 25. But anyway, you know, to the start of the third. I get to around 8 or 9 minutes at the third, and then I take over from there. And it is transformative because, number one of my biggest problems, Brian, if you remember, is the whole wait time and the halftime show. Oh. That's gone, you know, because you jump right to it. You bypass the whole opening presentation, the whole halftime, which is great. Not because those aren't good, but because me personally, I don't care about that.
And it's unskippable.
So I've just been
largely unskippable.
Right. Yeah. But when you use the in-game simulation feature where you can very quickly go from the start of the game right to that moment in the third where you then just say, okay, pick up from right here, and boom, you're in. It's a really, wow, what a great feature. It's so good. It transforms my experience dramatically. So I'm doing great with the Wizards. Like I said, I'm day and day right now. I'm in first place in the Eastern Conference. I'm winning a lot more than I'm not. And I'm just having a lot of fun with NBA 2K. So those are the games that I'm playing right now.
So you want to know what I'm playing? Well, actually,
yes.
I guess it's more revisiting and observing. NCAA football 14. Rich, it's our last college football game.
Yes.
And
a lot of melancholy tweets today. I saw our friend Mike Phillips say, yep, Brian, this makes me sad.
Yeah.
I definitely watched that GIF multiple times and thought to myself, man, come on. A lot of, shaking heads at that stuff today.
Yeah, I fired it back up, and I'm running simulations for the college football playoff games and watching just from a broadcast camera, CPU versus CPU, and it's really, it's compelling. It's compelling not just because the games have been interesting in how they develop, but just the some of the animations you see, and I'm like, that's better than what we have now. Now, as a whole, the game is still a little stiff. There are definitely animations that are not looking, you know, present day. But as a whole, it's just it's fascinating to me to watch because it's so interesting because NCAA football is very different. College football is very different from pro football, and you can see the stylistic differences between these teams. So it's so pronounced as opposed to you know, Madden, because you'll watch an Oklahoma go no huddle the entire game, get to the line quickly, look over to the sideline for the call, you know, and then they'll face you know, a more pro style offense in Georgia, who's going to huddle up every play and run the ball more. And it's just really, it's really interesting. You saw that in, or I saw that in the Alabama versus Clemson game also. Alabama much slower to the line. So it's interesting to see those clashes and then the outcomes are varied as well. Because of that, I've seen, going back a few years, I've seen high scoring games, I've seen a few blowouts, I've seen some defensive battles, and as we were talking about before we started the show, defensive battles in sports video games are a rarity. They're almost like designed out of the games, because for most people, a defensive battle equals boredom. But I saw a CPU. I don't want to spoil results here, because you should check out on Friday and Saturday. I'll have the summaries of each game and some highlights and stats and basically the key observations that I was able to make from the games. But one game was more on the offense and one game was more on the defense. Both games went essentially down to the wire in the fourth quarter. So really a lot of fun. And yeah, it's sad. It's sad. You know, we passed by the 4-year mark of no college football back in, what was it, July? So, you know, and there's really no end in sight to that. I had someone ask, when's the earliest we might see NCAA football or college football game return? And I said, 2021/2022 seems to be the most realistic target at this point, because we're still waiting on courts and the lawsuit that's in, you know, in that process right now. Jeffrey Kessler is leading, and that's still in kind of preliminary stages, where it may go to trial next year. And even if that went the right direction, then you're talking appeals courts, and then you're talking okay, now we can pay the players. Yay. Well, it's going to take another 2 years or so to develop that game and get it ready for release. So it's a distant, you know, possibility out there. It's going to be a little while. It'll probably happen eventually. There's no certainty, though, on when that will be, except it's not going to be next year or the year after. So, Rich, yeah, I posted a couple GIFs on Twitter. I was just... I saw certain plays and I was like, wow, you know, that looks so good. And it just really fits, you know, going back. And, you know, a lot of times we memorialize, you know, the final editions of games as better than they were, or at least we remember them better than they were. And I don't think that's the case with NCAA Football 14. I think that was one of the best sports games ever made. And it's held up better than I would have imagined.
I think we all would agree. Certainly I do. When it came out, we knew it was something special. And it had been good for many years. It's not that it had not been good. Some years were better than others. But the NCAA football franchise was at the top of my list of things that I loved on an annual basis. So you won't find a bigger NCAA fan than me. It's so
unfortunate, because I think at the end of the day, where what anything will come down to is it worth anybody's time and money anymore? That's the question. And I don't think the answer is yes. I don't think it's worth EA's time and money, and I certainly don't think it's worth the NCAA's time, because the reason I say that is because for both of those is the revenue that it would potentially bring in versus the cost that it would take to bring it to market. I don't think there's any way you can make any of that work.
Well, that's why you need to win a lawsuit that allows players to be paid. Once you can do that, then you can have a true ultimate team, not just using legends and former players. And the sales of the game will be higher just because of that authenticity of having the accurate rosters right out of the box. And that's what they got to wait for. There's really no alternative at this point.
But I mean, getting back to my question, at one point, is it worth it to spend the resources that you need to bring that to life?
EA has an advantage here in that they have assets. Now, they'd have to update a lot of them, but they do have assets already. They also have the Madden Frostbite engine, and this is how they were able to essentially share resources over the years. If this was a company starting from scratch, going to make a college football game, that's too mammoth of a proposition. That's just, it's unimaginable to build out with, 100 and plus teams and stadiums and mascots and, 1,000 uniform different combinations and crowd chants and cheerleaders. I mean, there's too much involved there, but EA has a little bit of an advantage in that they do have a lot of stuff they could borrow and adjust to fit the game. So it wouldn't be starting from scratch for them. And that's, I think, why they remain in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, they're the only ones, obviously, that could ever do it. And the other part that's interesting to think of is it may not sort of make sense on its own as an individual title as far as what you'd have to spend to bring it back to the market. But as part of a greater portfolio and a subscription service, right, yeah, it certainly adds value to that. So, there's a few different ways to look at it. But I just think the further we go out from the release of the last one, the more and more difficult the overall effort is, and EA are the only ones that would have the resources to do it because of what you just said. I mean, there's no one else that would even, I don't know how anybody else would sort of from scratch bring a college football or any other football game to market. I mean, it's kind of been proven you can't do it at this point.
Yeah. All right, Rich. So you want to move on, talk about some of the biggest stories of 2017?
Let's do it.
All right. So I wrote up a piece at Sporting News. Go ahead and check that out, people. It's summarizing the 12 most important sports gaming stories of the year. I've also got a few others that didn't quite make the cut that I think we'll get to. And Rich, you may have some of your own. What would you like to hit on first, Rich?
Ryan, start right at the top of your list.
No, we're just going to go in order. All right, Rich. Let's talk a little Nintendo Switch, because this is something we discussed over quite a long period of time.
Some of us have a little crow to eat here. One of us will.
Well,
I'm not sure who it's going to be.
You went a little overboard. I think at one point you said FIFA was going to have like a 50% attach rate.
I don't know if those were the exact numbers, but you might have seen that from where I was coming. I agree. I am the first to admit that I was optimistic on the sales numbers for predictions for FIFA on the Switch. It didn't have the impact I thought it was going to have, which is surprising to me because of the quality of the game and of the relative lack of units of other kinds of games available on the platform, especially at the time. But on the other hand, the numbers are what they are. So it was not as successful, not nearly as I had predicted it would be.
I don't think FIFA 18 was a disaster. It probably about met the more realistic expectations EA probably had, not your expectations, Rich. It probably met what they were expecting. And I would anticipate that it did well enough that they're going to continue with FIFA there. What I think it means is the less likelihood of them bringing over a game like Madden or certainly NHL or NBA Live. I don't think they're going to invest those resources, but they got FIFA up and running. They can expand on it. I mean, they don't have to do a whole lot. The problem is if they go the kind of legacy route that they did on the last Nintendo consoles, it's going to die off too. So, it's kind of an interesting situation they've got there. But it was surprising that I think in its first week, and we're talking about in Europe or in England, one of its stronger markets, that the Switch version was outsold by the Xbox 360 version. I'm not tearing down FIFA 18 on the Switch because I think it did probably okay. But if you're not a Nintendo, if you're not a Nintendo game, I don't see, has anything on the Switch beside Nintendo games been a huge hit? It's all been Mario and Zelda, right? Is there something I'm missing there?
Those are the big ones. Are Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, ARMS, Splatoon 2. Mm-hmm. Mario Rabbids is a Mario game. Technically, I believe it's published by Ubisoft, but that's probably the one. But even so, it uses Mario. As far as I know, all of the top sellers on Switch are all Nintendo games, as you would expect, because that is traditionally the case anyway. So, yeah, it's looking back, you were right, and I'm surprised, but it makes sense as you look at it.
Yeah, we never really, and I didn't see it really appear on any sales charts. We never heard anything really about the NBA 2K18 on the Switch, which FIFA 18 would have been the stronger brand probably worldwide. NBA 2K18 would have been the stronger one here in North America, but didn't seem to make any waves. The reviews were kind of mediocre on it because it had some technical issues.
And I haven't played it. Yeah. I have not played it. I mean, I am playing it on the PS4. That's my 2K machine and has been for many, many, many years. I don't know that I would have two of my GMs going, so I don't sort of feel compelled to get it on the Switch.
This is the argument we had, though, Rich. This is everybody else. I already have the game on this console. Why would I want to do it again on this console? So that's kind of...
To take it... Right.
Yeah.
With FIFA, I have it more than I do for NBA 2K. FIFA plays great. Like, the FIFA doesn't have any technical issues. It plays very nice, very smooth. It's a beautiful game. I have a hard time scoring because I'm so accustomed to Pro Evolution, and FIFA plays very differently than Pro Evolution, and I just have a very hard time being successful at the game unless I play it on the low levels, and the low levels aren't fun. I want to play it on professional. That's what I play Pro Evo on. With NBA 2K, having to push all that power, as you mentioned, the fact that it's not smooth also has been another reason I haven't gone that direction. Whereas with FIFA, I don't have that problem. Having it on the go is a very nice thing, even though I have FIFA on the Xbox One already.
So what do we anticipate for 2018, Rich? FIFA 19 and NBA 2K19 on Switch?
That's a great question. I don't anticipate more than that.
Yeah.
I could see either or both of them bowing out as well. You know, there's some tennis games coming, right? Aren't those coming on the Switch? So there are some other titles that we're going to see?
I don't think they were Switch. I think it was just Xbox One, PS4. I'd have to
probably
check.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to double check on that. But I don't know. Tennis would seem to be a pretty natural fit for the Switch.
I agree. Totally. I mean, one of my favorite portable games of the last decade was the launch Virtua Tennis with the Vita. If anyone remembers that, that's an amazing game. Loved it. So tennis works on those kind of platforms.
Yeah, I'd like to see, really, with the Switch, I'd like to see more of the alternative type sports games. I don't need another platform or, to play a traditional sports game. I think if they, if we saw a more varied array of sports, the ones that typically aren't the big sellers. You know, put arcade games on the Switch. Why isn't there, you know, NBA Playgrounds is on the Switch, but they barely could support it. But we need more than just that. We need some different types of games. And, you know, Super Mega Baseball, I don't know if they actually were going to be able to get it done for Switch, but I'd like to see those there. Because the traditional ones, the FIFAs, the NBA 2Ks, I think everybody who is really dedicated to playing those games on a yearly basis are probably picking it up somewhere else.
Well, and as I was talking about just a few minutes ago, it's another reason Golf Story is so great.
Right.
You know,
it's
exactly that reason. It's a great example of a non-traditional sports game or sports-themed game that works fantastic on that system. And one of the reasons I'm playing it so much is because I am playing it both on the TV and on the go.
All right, next, Rich, we have Madden and the introduction of its first story mode known as Long Shot. And this Long Shot is really probably the sole reason why Madden was able to get the support it did in our Sports Game of the Year voting, which neither of us had Madden in the top eight.
And I loved Long Shot, too.
Yeah.
And it didn't push Madden into it for me because of a lot of other reasons. I didn't hate Madden at all. I've been the same level of Madden player for a long time now. I played in our online leagues regularly for years and years and years. And over the last 3 years, my ability to be successful in Madden has deteriorated rapidly. This game has passed me by or I've lost it. But I mean, I haven't lost it in any of the other games that I play. So I'm just confused by what's happening. It's just, man, it's kicking my butt.
Yeah. Yeah. So neither of us had it in the top three, but if I were ranking based on like the most, the best new feature or mode or kind of the most the biggest risk that was taken, it'd probably be Long Shot, and I think it deserves recognition for that. And you know, I really liked it. Yeah, I really appreciated that it was very football smart. It was well acted. It was engaging at times. I mean, it is still a story you're kind of just guided through. And we saw what EA did with The Journey in Season 2 of FIFA, where they started to add in some customizable elements, you know, change up how the character looks and get them different items. But this very much guided you through, and then you just had a few interactive segments. But even those interactive segments were really cool, like playing on an army base. Stuff like that. It was awesome. And I didn't even really know going into Long Shot that it was based around a reality show concept. And so I thought that was a kind of a fun, really relevant to, you know, 2017. Where almost everything seems to have reality show elements on television or in life, Rich. So I was really impressed with Long Shot. I thought it was a lot of fun. The downside, of course, to putting a great deal of resources into a story mode is you play it once, and you know, it was 3.5 hours. And after that, it's over, and then it's on to the rest of the game, which maybe didn't feel like it had advanced as much as you had hoped. So that's the one thing you have to worry about with story modes, whereas you know, NBA 2K has kind of integrated its story mode within its other online modes, its Park and its Pro-Am, and so you kind of continue after that. Long Shot, you know, they gave you cards for Ultimate Team and stuff, but it was just kind of done at that point. So, I love Long Shot. And it's going to be interesting to see whether it wins the Pasta Padre Award for the best story mode, because there's some good ones this year. So I was really impressed with what they did, and I would imagine they're going to have a sequel next year. And I don't know if it'll be a straight sequel or a whole new story.
Yeah, who knows? I loved it too. Big fan. And as anyone who's listened to the show for even a little while knows, that Todd Zuniga is a buddy of mine. He was the writer. And Michael Young, who is his good friend and has been on this show many times, right, were the driving forces behind it. So that didn't, I mean, the fact that I enjoyed it just made me even happier for those guys, but I didn't sort of enjoy it any more or less because of the fact that I knew them. I guess That's not true. I did enjoy it more, but that's only because I've talked to those guys for years on the show about sort of what they want to do and how they want to do it. And having worked with Todd years and years ago on Four Strings, or knowing his sense of humor and everything. And there's some of that stuff worked in there too. So I just, I'm a big fan. I'm happy for them. It seems to have done well. There's plenty of people who want to knock it. That's fine. There's plenty of people who want to praise it. That's fine. I liked it, and I hope they do another version or another take, or maybe they need a couple of years to do the next round. I'm fine with that too. You know what I mean? It'll be very interesting to see what happens, but hopefully it's viewed as a success by everybody over there. It's cool.
All right, Rich, how about the variety in the genre coming from indie developers? And this is something that continues from the previous year, really the past few years, but we got an arcade basketball game for the first time in a long time.
A licensed arcade basketball game.
That's interesting. NBA Playgrounds actually having the NBA license.
And a lot of players. So it was the NBA, the NBA Players Association. It's got to be an alumni thing in there or individual licenses. There's a lot of stuff going on to make that work.
Yeah, pretty involved. We also had arcade football with Mutant Football League. We had the sequel to the Golf Club, which was, I thought, excellent. We had Disc Jam, which was, you know, pretty well described as a combination of tennis and air hockey. There was an arcade hockey game, an arcade soccer game, even a surfing game. Then we also got the announcements for, as you alluded to earlier, the first tennis games for the current generation.
Two of them,
yeah, for early 2018. We went from 2012 till now with none, and then two of them announced within a period of a few months for early 2018. It's kind of funny. But yeah, that's where we're getting them. You know, we're not going to get these kind of unusual or unique or smaller sport type games from the major publishers, and so we need the indie developers to come through. And some of these were good, some of them were not so much. But you have to appreciate at least the opportunity to play something new.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a guy who works in the indie sports game world myself, and I have a lot of appreciation for and support for all of these things. So I think we're going to see more as we move along. I think it'll be interesting, just as we were saying, whether the Switch becomes a haven for other things as well or not. But, yeah, seeing all of these non-traditional sports games is nothing but a good thing. The more we get out there, the better. They're not all going to work. It's very, very, very difficult to make video games that can be played by lots of people. So more power to them. I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to the tennis next year. And it's a very good time to support indie development in the sports games world on console.
Let's talk a little bit about virtual reality, Rich. It's been a while.
What? Is there any?
Yeah, well, I know you are in kind of the consideration to buying virtual reality headsets.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I don't see a experience that compels me to buy it, but I'm sure there will be a point in the not too distant future that I'm going to want to get something, probably PlayStation VR, but probably whatever the next version of it is, if that is a thing. I'm just not there yet. My son's still young. And also I was talking earlier about wires and HDMI inputs. That just adds a whole other layer to that whole thing. So there's a few things at work there.
Yeah, so, you know, there's big expectations when those launched Rift and Vive and PlayStation VR in 2016. Really, they probably haven't fulfilled those expectations. I think what's, you know, gotten my attention is that sports has been virtually non-existent there. And what you've seen with Sony in the past is they'd take their own games to showcase their new hardware. We've now gone 2 years, two editions of MLB The Show, where they haven't even bothered. I mean, what was it, PlayStation Move and 3D and everything? Anytime they rolled out something new, the show would have it at first opportunity. And they haven't done that with VR. You'd think they could do a VR home run derby or something along those lines if they really believed in in this PlayStation VR, and I wonder if they just kind of are they don't really have the belief in backing it that they expressed at the outset.
I don't know. I think it's just really a lot of time and resources you have to dedicate to bringing something like that to market that in a way that works and is enjoyable. And I think to do something like that requires a tremendous amount of planning and effort. And I'm sure that they looked at what would it take to make this happen versus how many more units of VR, PSVR can we sell, and or how many more copies of MLB The Show do we think that we'll sell? I mean, I would be surprised if they basically didn't look at that and say, there's no way that we can make this work. That's the only reason I can think of, because everything else points to it, right? Sony has their own VR platform. Sony owns the MLB The Show, you know, its first party. All of that lines up. So I got to believe it just comes down to, you know, you say home run derby. What does that mean? Does that mean that you're standing at home plate inside, you know, a single MLB stadium that has to be completely, you know, created to scale and look good? You know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty mammoth effort, I would think, to make something like that work, you know? So you got to believe it. I don't know, man. I think they just sort of looked at me like, nope, doesn't work, doesn't work.
All right, on to the return, question mark, of NBA Live. Is this the return of NBA Live, Rich, or do we have, you know, a much better outlook for, you know, it potentially growing and surviving in the future because of NBA Live 18, which is, you know, it's a decent game. NBA Live 18 is a game that you could legitimately prefer over the competition. Not everyone does, obviously, but some do. And it's got a really strong career mode with what's known as the One. Now, its franchise mode was a disaster, but the One was really strong, and not just in, you know, how it was built, but also it wasn't infected with microtransactions. I think everybody was relieved by that when they tried it. You know, it's just so many issues for NBA Live over the years, and the, you know, NBA Live 10 was very good, and then they just went and wrecked everything for years. And NBA Live 18 is the first time then since NBA Live 10 that we can, I think, look at it and say, yeah, you know, that's a viable video game in the current year that we're in.
It's a good game. I prefer NBA 2K, but I played both. As I mentioned earlier, I am continuing to play NBA 2K. I don't know if I'll play any more NBA Live. I might not. But it's a good game, and there are people whose opinions I respect that really like it a lot. And I get a lot of those reasons. In particular, you know, playing online. I've had some fun playing online in NBA Live with you know, Mills Gaming TV over there. He's had me on. We've done a couple, two or three. It's been a while, but we've done those. And so, yeah, I'm glad. You can't be anything but glad. To me, again, we talk about portfolio. I think this is important to EA as, you know, online live subscription services become more and more prevalent, to have this as something that offers and brings value to those subscriptions. And the fact that it's going to be good moving forward, because you got to believe that they're only going to build on this, is nothing but a good thing. I just wonder, again, like everything, I don't mean to keep going back to it, but you can't have these kind of conversations without thinking about it. I wonder what the economics of it are, because they have not been getting a lot of revenue at all from this franchise and spending a lot in development and licensing costs. So you got to wonder and hope that now that it's finally sort of getting where it needs to be, you got to hope that the it keeps lining up for them to keep making it.
Yeah, I'd imagine that EA probably doesn't anticipate profiting off NBA Live for a couple more years. And that's being optimistic. And so you're right, you know, maybe it becomes more a part of a subscription service and its value is seen more there. And then also you get it, people into a subscription, maybe they start playing Ultimate Team and actually spending money there. But it's been a long, really rough road for NBA Live. And it's nice to just kind of have it back and in a position to compete. At least we have two decent two excellent games to,
just
to
like
consider.
Soccer.
And
just like soccer.
And this doesn't even include the fact that you can, I think, still get NBA Live 18 for $10.
Oh my gosh, it's been cheap forever. You know, it's been cheap forever.
Again, and so, this is EA. They don't care. They want to give. They'll give the game away if it gets people to play it right now, and hopefully, you know, they get to enjoy it and believe in it again. Because it's going to take. Yeah, it's going to take a while. Credibility doesn't come back in just 1 year.
At a certain point, though, they're also going to have to stop with the deep discounts, right? You don't want to have deep discounts that early because you devalue your brand and you really discourage early adopters. So they got to find the right, not maybe they have, I mean, you know, who do I don't even know what they are, right? But that's a risk that you run when you have deep discounts.
So let's move on to esports, which is a huge thing in gaming, obviously, these days. Sports are trying to gain traction in esports, and we're not quite there yet with sports games. EA really had some problems in 2017, but they were not prepared for the scrutiny that comes with events of this nature, and neither were the competitors, who were, you know, found to have either a history of offensive remarks on social media, or another previous winner who was found to have cheated in a qualification stage. I mean, EA has to better screen their participants. They have to better monitor their participants. This is something that every esports organization does very carefully, that people enter into contracts for how they're going to represent themselves and various organizations. This all comes with, again, the scrutiny of being something bigger, being something more important. But we also have, I think, on the horizon something that could potentially take esports with sports games to the next level, and that's the 2K, NBA 2K League. Let me call it the NBA 2K League. They launched it as the NBA 2K E-League, but now it's the NBA 2K League. And what's interesting about this is that you've got the participation of many NBA teams this first season. It's going to be 17 of them. And so people, spectators, actually have a rooting interest to say, you know, because right now, who really cares about who these individuals are who are playing, you know, Madden or FIFA or NBA 2K individually? But when you can root for a team and you say, man, I'm a Pacers fan, I'm going to root for the Pacers E-League team, then you've got something there, and you've got teams of people to where you can actually start to, grow that influence and spread to a greater audience. And so I'm interested to see how that goes. There's a lot of question marks still around the NBA 2K League because we don't know how they're going to properly balance it as far as characters go, because as we know right now, people can just pay to get their characters up in their typical pro-am. We don't know whether the player selection process and the draft they're doing will really be fair. Or are they just going to draft like YouTubers with large followings for marketing purposes? And then we just don't know how it's going to be presented and whether it will be compelling for spectators. But I think they're on the right track as far as they've got the teams involved. They're making a big deal out of it. They've all got these E-League teams all have their own logos that kind of tie into the NBA team looks. And it looks like it's going to be actually quite a bit of fun to follow. And it'd be the first reason why we have any reason to follow esports with sports games. Because, again, it's really a difficult proposition to think that there are going to be people who want to watch people playing sports video games when the real sport is actually being played at its highest levels. What do you think, Rich?
Well, I'm not the demographic here. Esports is not my thing. I know about esports. I've written about it. I've even been to a couple of minor events, you know, years ago. So I'm not like completely out of it. But, you know, look, for me personally, esports, I've already, the plate is full for me as far as the amount of time that I'm able to pay attention and either play a video game or watch a live sports event or watch a TV show or a movie. So I'm personally not going to find time in my schedule to watch this stuff, but that doesn't matter. I'm not who they're going for. It is a fascinating experiment. You've got a lot going for you here in that you have got the combined participation of the NBA and 2K. Like, this is, these are not fly-by-night organizations, you know, where there's a lot of esports, I'm going to say shadiness around the world of esports in, yeah, in a lot of areas, in particular around, you know, the money. So anyway, the fact that, you know, this is being put together by the people who make the game and the people who own the IP, so to speak, with the NBA is a good thing. So it feels like, from where I am, without paying a whole lot of attention, it feels like that this is being done methodically and intelligently and with thought by people who know what they're doing. I don't exactly know when it starts, but I know that there's more and more conversation about it, so it's getting closer, and I'm definitely interested to see how it goes as well. It's not like I'm going to be able to watch it, right? I'm not. There's just not enough time in the day, but I'm definitely going to be tracking and talking to you about and sort of at least monitoring what happens with it, just like we do with the Madden challenges and stuff like that, mm-hmm, which, you know, if you're, you know, following that, also seems to be trending upward as well in terms of viewers and such too. So very interesting directions, but overall I agree with you, but maybe it's because we're old men that sort of tying the front teams to the real sports franchises is a good thing. But we say that as people who've been watching sports for 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
The kids who are watching sports are, from what they tell me, right? My son is not a big sports guy, you know, are much more attached to players than teams because of things like video games and fantasy sports and stuff like that. I don't know that I believe that, but that's, you know, another consideration here too.
All right, so next on the list is the post-release support that these games have been getting, Rich, and how it's sustaining interest in the games and kind of the longevity of the games due to that. We obviously know the Maddens and the FIFAs of the world. It's Ultimate Teams that drive that mode, drives people to play year-round. But what I found interesting was Rocket League, released in 2015, still getting regular content. Still killing it. They got like 38 million players now. People who've
played. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And we talk about esports. That's huge in esports now. There was also Forza Horizon 3, I thought, did some really cool things with DLC this year.
Oh, yeah. And the Hot Wheels was awesome.
Yeah. So that game still, you know, even with Forza 7 out, might be the better might be the better racing game this year. So yeah, that was just an observation. It was more an observation that post-release support has become so important that the year, not just the year-round nature now of the traditional licensed sports games, but also other ones that they don't just release and leave. Even you can look at a game like NASCAR Heat 2, which has had several DLC go out.
Sure.
So the publishers are supporting the games, and I think consumers are being rewarded for sticking with the games.
Well, and now it's the expectation that we all have, mm-hmm, which we should, because that's sort of part of the deal. You know, we understand now that when you spend your $60 and, you know, to get the game, which if you're spending $60, you're not really quite doing it right, because if you want to play day one, thanks to Amazon, you should be doing that. Mm-hmm. Right. But anyway, so, you know, there's an expectation now that has been set, that's being matched and well delivered of that kind of service. That's just the world that we live in. So, you know, it's a really interesting trend that has, you know, sort of didn't really exist. Well, it did, but nowhere near like when this show started to where we are now. It's really completely flipped, you know, where the games were not designed for 12 months. They were designed for, you know, playing a franchise for a month or two, or, you know, playing online in ranked games. Right? That's kind of what they were. I mean, Ultimate Team was a thing, and it was a big thing, but it wasn't anything like what it is now in 5 short years. So it's just that's the state that we're in, which continues to be the trend that we watch.
Let's now discuss my least favorite trend in all of sports, sports gaming, and that's what publishers are doing now with their games for release, and especially irritated by what EA Sports did in 2017, which is we're going to release a higher price version of our game. And you just said if you want the game day one, you don't have to pay $60. That's true generally, Rich. But not with EA Sports, what they're doing now, which is if you want the game day one, you're going to buy our special edition and pay $20 or whatever more. And then if you want to be, you know, just buying the game at regular price, you're a loser. You have to wait 3 days. Sorry. So I think I really hate that because it irritates me, Rich. They try and frame it like they're rewarding people who are paying for the special edition, but really they're punishing the people who just want the standard game, Rich. And it drives me nuts. And then Sony is doing not quite as bad, but they're limiting MLB The Show 18 to the digital store and then GameStop if you want it on day one, or you have to wait 4 extra days to get it from an Amazon or a Best Buy, where, like you said, Rich, you can actually save money by buying it through their various programs. So I really hate this, Rich. This is one of my least favorite things, and it's something that's really hasn't been covered probably to the extent that it should, and you know, people are worried about more important things, obviously, but I think this really irritates a lot of people. I heard from a lot of people over the various releases about how they hated what this was doing. And again, they're not stupid. People aren't stupid. They're punishing the people who want to buy it at the regular price.
So I can't argue with that. I don't think it's viewed as a punishment per se.
It's a punishment, Rich.
Just I mean, look, they're clearly capitalizing on the excitement that people have to play the new version of the new game. That's what it is, right? And people vote with their wallets. And I tell you, I've talked about it. You know, I got the Amazon day one deal for various games that by the time I got it, people had been playing it for like a week. Like Forza was one of them, Forza 7. Like I got the regular old, hey, hello, I'd like to buy the regular game version, which was delivered day one. But like I said, it was like a week after it. And same thing with MLB Show. I got the regular version delivered from Amazon Prime because I didn't need to play it 4 days early or on the opening day. I could have waited 4 days, and I did wait, and I do wait. But that's me. I understand that other people want to play it early. So I'm personally and professionally, what we do is offer discounts for pre-orders, but we don't do extra special Prime day one editions that cost more or, you know, other versions. So I also like the early days of, hey, if you pre-order, you get a little discount or you get a little of this or the other thing. What can I tell you? You know, if you really want to play the game early, or you're really into Dynasty or Ultimate Team, you know, you got to believe people understand the value of their money, and to enough people, this is a value that they're willing to pay for.
Of course, you know, it also doesn't work from the release dates that they do it, which is the expensive version comes out on the Tuesday the game always would have released, and then you're a cheap ass version comes out on 3 days later on Friday.
But there's another thing here too, Brian. I mean, another reason that I generally don't do any of this early stuff is because nothing ever works on day one. Stuff never works. So that's like another reason, in my opinion, not to buy these early editions, right? Because half the time the people who are buying them are buying them not to play offline. They're buying them to play online, and they don't work.
Well, yeah, here's the problem with that though, is that for what they're pushing for, and I would say I wouldn't mind it as much if the stuff you got wasn't just the Ultimate Team stuff, that's all they give you, right? Is like bonus Ultimate Team stuff.
Yeah, understood.
If there was content that was, you know, something else that's compelling, then okay. But if you are a dedicated Ultimate Team player, those 3 days are important to you, Rich. Even with
that's what I mean.
Issues. So
that's what I'm saying. To a certain segment of player, that's really important. And to another segment of player, that doesn't mean enough to spend an extra 20 or 30 bucks. Like, there's just different kinds of people out there.
All right. Subscription plans, Rich. We talked about this, I don't know, a month or so ago.
Yes. I love them. Give me all of them.
Yes. I like some subscription plans. I do like EA Access. EA Access is excellent. Xbox Game Pass is pretty good. A little more expensive, but a bigger library.
Superb. Many great games. So many great games.
And really, if you bought if you got a new console for Christmas, you don't really need to go out and get any games yet. Just use the Game Pass. And save a lot of money that way. And then, of course, EA, who wants to consider a future of a subscription-based, you know, setup with all of their games or all of their sports games or all of them together. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The Vault. Sign me up. I'm ready.
Yeah, let's basically go. Be EA Access, but maybe you're paying a higher price to get all the games on day one.
Yep. I'm good with that.
Yeah. So that's where we may be headed. I would hesitate to say that's going to be anytime soon. But I think it will be, but I don't
think it's going to replace physical either, because there's just too large of a segment that can't do the subscription services. But I got to believe, I mean, like Amazon Prime, when it was first introduced, you know, it took them a couple, 2 or 3 or 4 years to move. But from the beginning, there were people in the right situation to where that totally worked. There are people today who in the right situation would subscribe to EA Prime or whatever you want to call it. By the way, that's trademarked by me. I have that trademark. Everybody.
We already have a Twitch Prime, Rich. Are you cutting?
Right. So that would sign up for that. That would just give them instant access to the entire EA library on Xbox One or PlayStation 4 or whatever. Right. And there's probably enough of those people now who do it to where it would make sense, which is why you'll probably see it within a year or two. But again, I think it's additive. It's not replacement. Eventually, it will replace. But when I say eventually, you're probably talking at least 5 years and probably more like 7 to 10. Yeah. Because, again, you cannot ignore significant parts of the country that...
the world, Rich.
The world, right. Right. Yes. Yeah. So that's why I say longer. But again, I think... It makes a lot of sense to get in front of this stuff, which they have. I mean, all these services that we're talking about, EA Access, Xbox Games Pass, you know, there are others, I'm sure, right? I guess Ubisoft doesn't.
You can also count in Xbox Live and PlayStation Plus.
Sure, right, which are great and give you games and all that kind of stuff, too. Like, I spend a lot of money on these things, but I feel like I get my money's worth, and I don't even use them nearly as much as I could. Mm-hmm. Like, these services just deliver so much value. I've had a blast playing Xbox One Games Pass games. I beat Sleeping Dogs, which is a big game on the Games Pass, and I played through Toy Soldiers, which was spectacular. And I played a bunch of other games, too. Some of them I love, some of them I didn't. Some of them I play regularly. Like, there's a bunch of old arcade games and a bunch of great Pac-Man games. So anyway... All of these services, I just think if you're in a position where you have broadband internet and you can sort of, you know, it makes more sense. Like, I'm telling you, Brian, right now, I subscribe to most of these services. I spend a lot less on games now than I did. Don't Guaranteed. I don't buy many games anymore. Yeah. I really don't have to. And I hardly ever buy... Well, let me rephrase it. The only games I even consider buying day one are sports games. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even think about getting any of the other new games. I mean, I did get – that's not true. With Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey, I did get. But so with a few exceptions, pretty much only on the Switch, it's just the sports games that I get. And I'm just – I have so much fun playing the backlog – and of Xbox One, Games Pass, and other things that I don't even need to. And that's another great value of those services. They really can't, you know, they just have shifted how, shifted how I spent my money. I still spend money on these games, but just not as much. And I spend them on services instead of new titles that may or may not hold their value.
So we talked about this a lot earlier in, I guess it was it November? I don't remember. Time blends together. Xbox One X, Rich. It's awesome. I saw some huge improvements for sports games. Obviously, it's across the board, not just sports games, but what I tested were the sports games. Hefty price tag. It's got the power to match it, though, especially Madden, which runs so much smoother than it does on any of the other consoles. But the cuts in loading times are huge as well, and I analyzed all that on Hit the Pass. It's been great when I fire up a game and I just want to get on and do something quick, and I know I'm saving quite a bit of time doing that, and the games look fantastic, and like I said, even run slightly better. And in Madden's case, it's significantly better. So if I were to say, you know, if you're going to get one of the, you know, high-powered consoles now, I think I would budget for the Xbox One X. Although it's a luxury item. It is just like the PS4 Pro would be a luxury item. You don't need it. But if you want to get the top-of-the-line one, that's where I would go.
Well, that's what I'm doing. I mean, I'm getting that before the PS4 Pro because of everything I just said for the last 10 minutes yammering on and on. EA Access, Xbox Games Pass.
Right?
That's exactly what this is built for. And then, you know, through EA Access and digital platforms, I can have the best performing version of, you know, Madden next year, presuming that it maintains, if not gets better, as well as, you know, the strong, you know, versions of all the AAA games. I mean, to me, it's, if I'm going to get something, that's the first one. The PS4 Pro comes next. And but yeah, once the TV's up, I'm getting the Xbox One X. It is happening. Just a matter of when.
So the biggest story in all of gaming, Rich, I think we would probably agree, relates to how publishers are facing backlash over the way they've implemented monetization tactics in the games and the way it's influencing their game designs. And, you know, it all kind of kicked off with NBA 2K18, which is funny because 2K18 isn't the loot box game, but it kind of raised the awareness of how, like I said, how game design is being influenced negatively by these efforts to just make more and more money off of them. And we've never been anti-business, you know, especially you, Rich. We don't say you shouldn't have microtransactions in games. I think we both appreciate in the EA Sports games that that's all limited to their Ultimate Team. They don't have that anywhere else.
I agree on all counts.
Yeah, and in NBA 2K though, throughout its career mode, its my career story mode, and everything in there with its online modes, it's all about money. They start you artificially low. They put you up against people who are much higher, who paid their way to get there. You have to get to certain ratings to even get, you know, certain accessories or anything. You know, it's all about raising your rating, and the most efficient way to do that is just spend money. Otherwise, you're going to spend hundreds of hours trying to get to a point where people just spent money to get to. And so, again, that amplified awareness around these tactics. And then that was really, it all kind of hit the peak with Star Wars Battlefront 2, which is really what everybody thinks of when they talk about loot boxes. Now we have lawmakers considering legislation to ban games for minors if they've got loot boxes in them. Who knows where that goes, but just that it's in a discussion has already caused, you know, video game publisher stocks to take a hit from investors. And you had reviewers kind of standing up against it too. NBA 2K18, the lowest rated NBA 2K game in a decade. So pretty big developments here as we went through the last quarter of the year, Rich.
Yes, a lot of developments. NBA 2K also is like just crushing it sales-wise, number one overall. So for all of the backlash it has... Maybe it has impacted the sales, but the sales are still the best ever and crushing everything else.
And I don't know. And whether it impacts, I don't know. But I think we'd be more likely to see that next year if that's the case.
You're right. Absolutely right. Yeah. As you have for years pointed out, there's a lag effect here. It takes a year sometimes too, but the lag effect happens. So we'll see whether that happens.
I think we could see that Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Yes.
Sales were probably affected, but that's because this controversy all started happening before it even released.
Correct. They
had, was it through EA Access or was it through a beta that this really started making waves? It was
both.
Something early. It was well early in advance of the game's release. Yeah.
It was both. It was definitely both, right? It was the beta is where the awareness was first brought up. And in EA Access was when I think it really reached the tipping point because it wasn't a beta. It's like, here's the game.
Yeah.
And so that's how that all happened. So, I mean, look, let's be clear. Ultimate Team is the only thing that really matters with these big time console licensed sports games. Or shall I say, post sale revenue is the only thing that really matters. And I don't mean that cynically. I just mean that as a matter of business, you have to understand.
With the exception being NBA 2K.
I'm talking about, that's why I changed it from Ultimate Team to post sale revenue, meaning the your character in the park and stuff like that,
right?
I'm sure my team generates plenty of revenue for 2K, but it sure looks like the characters in from the park and such are get more revenue. But either way, all of these sorts of various ways of getting people to spend additional money afterwards are what really matters. So this is of utmost importance to get figured out and go away as quickly as possible so everybody can get back to exactly what they were doing. None of this is good news to any of the guys who make these games. None of it, right? So it'll be fascinating to see whether anything is done, because it's not like they've been hiding any of this, right? Like EA in its annual reports and 2K or Take-Two in its annual reports has to at least give some sort of indication. And as we've talked about on the show for years, they are making close to $1 billion. This will, I'm sure, 2017, it will be $1 billion in this, digital, Ultimate Team and other additional revenue streams here, right? So this is, they've been very clear and open and saying this is what we're building our business around. So it's not like they've been hiding it. They're very out in front of it. This has to go away. I think it will go away. I think ultimately, no pun intended, that it will get sort of taken care of internally, especially because the powers that be in the leagues also don't want to have any sort of unpleasant affiliation. We know that's one of the things that really caused the problem with Battlefront was a Disney situation where there was conflict between Disney and EA, and I'm sure EA doesn't want any conflict between the leagues.
No.
So I have a feeling that ultimately, again, man, I said it twice in a row. I don't think this is going to go into a bad place in the sports game world when it comes to these things. But I definitely think this is an unfortunate thing that every executive at all of these companies wished had not been brought to the fore. Because there's a history with these things, I think they're less likely to get hit. But any and all of these things are certainly in the spotlight.
One potential I don't know if I want to say outcome, but change that would have to be made to maybe satisfy legislators and parents and all that we discussed was the idea of maybe being forced or voluntary to post like pack odds, for instance.
Apple has recently had to. They've told their developers to do exactly that.
Exactly. That's where I was going, Rich. Is that we have that happening already on mobile? It may just be a matter of time before we see that to consoles as well.
And I think everybody would be okay with that at the end of the day.
Right.
That
seems fair. It seems like a compromise.
Right. And I think that's where, and that's why that's exactly why I say what I said, which is I think ultimately they'll get this squared away without controversy without litigation or any sort of legislation having to be introduced, because there's already a blueprint in what we just said. And having a blueprint goes a long way in making this thing, you know, and a blueprint that has been accepted, you know, in billion-dollar industries. So pretty sure that's where we're going. And that's what it makes complete sense. And doing something else would be – anything else would be silly.
So one other thing I wanted to – and it almost kind of ties into that all was – it didn't make my list, but – Was 2017 in your mind, you know, an indication that franchise mode is being pushed to the side in favor of ultimate teams and such? Because other than NBA 2K, it didn't seem like much was done with franchise modes in 2017. And there was quite a bit of criticism towards Madden and the show and a few others that They didn't really spend a lot of time investing on franchise mode, and people were disappointed with that.
So, no, I disagree. I play almost nothing but franchise mode. I play franchise mode in NBA 2K. I play franchise mode in Madden. I play franchise mode in MLB The Show. I play franchise mode in Pro Evolution. I play franchise mode in FIFA. I play franchise mode in NHL. That's what I do. Now, having said that, I don't know what else I could possibly want in those modes. I'm not trying to give anybody a pass. I recognize that there are passionate people out there who have lots of ideas and suggestions to spruce up and improve franchise modes. But what I'm saying is for what I want out of my games, I'm much more interested in I don't lack for stuff to do in my franchise modes in any of these games. I'm much more concerned with on the field, and that's why I play more Pro Evolution now than ever, because it's the best game on the field of any of them. It's why I play The Show as much as I do, because it's a close second, although I still can't hit. I used to be able to hit. For a couple of years I could hit, but now I can't hit anymore, which drives me nuts. You know, it's why I play NBA 2K, because I really love when I really start to figure out, and I'm still not even there, but I'm sort of at the beginning of getting there, figuring out how to really be successful. So I love all of the franchise modes, and I play all of the franchise modes. I play all of them. And so I'm very happy with them. So again, I'm not taking away from people who suggest that there are not as many resources going into them. I don't say that people who think they can be improved are wrong. But for me, they all already deliver. As long as the game on the field, on the court, on the ice, and that's one thing I want to talk about before we get out, continues to be improved or enjoyable, I'm good with what has been created. Because all of these franchise modes, these things are built on top of 10, 20, 30 years of stuff. You know, you can't invent new things to do, relatively speaking, right? You've got the rules of football. You've got a franchise mode that's, you know, sort of you've got a set of rules. You have seasons and salary caps and player roster limits. And, you know, this is how you acquire players and drafts and free agencies. Like, you can't, like, all of a sudden, well, now you're on the moon, right? Like, there's only so many things you can do, too. So, anyway, long rant over. I like franchise mode still.
What do you have, Rich? You have something on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say it was nice to see NHL, for me personally, make a nice rebound this year. I have been out on the NHL series for a couple, 2 or 3 years, and I've played a lot more of it this year than I have in years past. A lot of fun. I know that there's a lot of similarity in the presentation, which a lot of people have a problem with. I don't care. We've talked about it a million times. Presentation, as far as like pregame, postgame, halftime, is by far the least important thing to me in any game anyway. I just really have had a lot of fun. I continue to play NHL on a semi-regular basis. I'm going to complete my season with the Edmonton Oilers, and I'm going to try to make the playoffs, and I am going to try to win the Stanley Cup, although I don't think I will, but that's okay. But I just want to mention, good year for NHL. I really liked it. And glad to see it bouncing back. I believe it's doing well for EA. I hope it is. And it was a nice positive for me this year.
All right. Well, thank you, Rich. I'm glad we got an opportunity to run down really the biggest stories, the most important stories of 2017 here as the year winds down. Thank you to everyone for listening this year, hanging with us.
Yes.
It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, Rich, it's crazy, another year gone by. And
yep.
We're ready to fire it up.
That's for right.
2018.
Lots of good stuff coming up. In the next couple of weeks, we got friends of the show who will be telling us their favorite games of the year. Some old friends, some new friends, bunch of surprises in there, a bunch of things expected. So look for that as well. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we've also got, really, first time in a long time I can remember, a major sports game that's releasing in January, at the end of January, with UFC. So a lot to come here on the Press Row Podcast. Thank you again, everyone. Thanks, Rich Grisham, Out of the Park Developments. Thank you to myself, Pastor Padre. Thanks, I guess, is what I'm trying to say to everyone. It's that time of year, right? So I'm just going to say thanks to everyone. Thanks to everybody who contributed to the show in 2017. We're like over 250 episodes now, and like 4 million listeners, or
amazing,
I don't know, 4 billion listens, something.
We'll go with 1 billion. Yeah, we'll go with 4 billion. I'll take 4 billion.
For the advertisers out there, it's 4 billion we're at. all right.
Well, you know, yes. Yeah. Seriously, thank you, everybody. We really appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. All right. Take care. See you in 2018.